thought about living without her. The hole it would leave inside him, it was bleak and painful. He couldn't breathe, and it was then he knew the truth. He loved her. She was the strength that got him through his hardest days. The sound of her voice, the touch of her hand, those were what he craved most, not her blood, her life. I love her. Now he understood what people had tried to tell him. This was what love felt like. But it wasn't pleasant. It stabbed him with more ferocity than his father had done. God, it sucked to realize that someone else meant more to you than you did. No wonder Acheron disdained it so. The Atlantean was right. You gave a part of yourself to another, a part you couldn't reclaim. And it was gone before you even knew it. He had no idea when or how he'd given her his heart. But he couldn't deny the desolation inside him with the thought of losing her forever. I have to find help.
Bring her to me, Malachi, and I'll save her for you.
This time, he knew whose voice taunted him.
Noir?
Yes, come to me, Ambrosius, and I'll take care of you both.
Nick started to obey, then caught himself. Streetwise and tough, he wasn't anyone's fool. I'll take care of you both sounded like a threat to him. Cody gasped, drawing his attention back to her and the seconds of her life that were running out of her and down his arms. What should he do? She would die any minute now. Her life, or an eternity of slavery for him? Cody's words haunted him now. Sometimes our choices are only between lesser evils, but they are our choices alone to make. Was this fate or free will? He didn't know. And honestly, right now, he didn't care. A decision had to be made, right or wrong, life or death, slavery or freedom. Chapter 13. Cody came awake in the softest bed she'd ever been in. Panic tore her apart as she remembered what had happened. She'd gone after Nick to protect him and had been stabbed by his father. The last thing she remembered was Nick in his demon's form, the form that kept him from feeling anything for anyone. Yet the fierce Ambrosius Malachi had been crying as he held her and begged her not to die. Noir. He'd offered Nick a bargain for her life. Oh, Nick, she whispered, please tell me you didn't. Glancing around the room, she frowned. She lay in an old-fashioned rice bed. The hand-carved testers rose almost the hallway to the ornate ceiling that formed a dome over her. The lower part of the tray was painted sky blue with clouds. In the high arch overhead, someone had painted it to look like an ancient temple. Her heavy down cover was a deep, rich navy laced with gold and burgundy threads. She sat up, then immediately wished she hadn't, as a wave of nausea and pain hit her. It was only then she saw that she was wearing a white flannel nightgown. Warm and toasty, granted, but this was starting to freak her out. Who had removed her clothes? What had happened to her? Where was she? She knew she wasn't dead. Somehow she'd returned to the human realm, but how? Looking inside her gown, she saw the jagged scar where she'd been stabbed. All right, their fight in the fringe realm hadn't been a dream. And now she was starting to get angry. Who had dared to touch her while she'd been unconscious? What had happened to Nick? And most important, where was Nick now?
So you're back among the living.
She lifted her head out of her gown to find Caleb standing in the doorway. He had his dark hair brushed back from his face, which only emphasized how handsome a man he was. If he just didn't have that little demon infestation problem. I'm at your house? She asked.
You don't have to sound so offended. I do have people clean it, you know.
Sorry, she sighed wearily. You have no idea how confusing it is to wake up in a strange place with no idea how you got there. Caleb laughed.
Sure I do. Happens to me frequently.
She rolled her eyes at his frightening lifestyle. Yes, but I woke up in this bed alone. He sucked his breath in sharply.
Low blow, Code.
Maybe, but are you going to tell me how I got here and who undressed me?
He held his hands up in surrender.
That be your boy, not me. You want to bitch slap somebody? I'll fetch Nick. He's the one who brought you here.
That concerned her even more. Did he say anything to you about what happened?
Only that you two were attacked and you went down. He needed someplace safe to put you until you could heal. We both decided taking you to his place would be a huge mistake. His mom would ground him until retirement if he did that. Not to mention she'd want to know how you got stabbed and why you both weren't in the hospital.
True on all accounts. And none of this was allaying her fears. She should be dead. How had he saved her? Not one of the possibilities appealed to her. They all ended with Nick doing himself harm.
Where is he now?
Caleb checked his watch.
As of an hour ago, sanctuary. He and his mom should be heading over to school in a few for parent-teacher conferences.
He dropped his arm and narrowed his gaze at her. You make me nervous with the intensity of your interrogation. What do you know that I don't?
Noir offered him a bargain. We need to know if he took it.
Caleb went white as a sheet before he started cursing under his breath.
He seemed like normal Nick to me when I saw him, but now you have me worried too. That boy finds more trouble.
She wouldn't argue that.
Much like Bubba and Mark, you couldn't leave Nick alone for 5 minutes that he wasn't getting into something he shouldn't, or that something wasn't trying to eat him. Either way, watching his back was a full-time job.
She let out a long breath. How long have I been out?
Almost 4 days.
She cringed in reaction. 4 days, really?
Are you serious?
Why would I joke about that?
I don't know, you're a Deva. Some of you can be really twisted.
I'll remind you of that next time you need someone to save your sorry butt.
She ignored his threat. He'd come when she called. He was terribly dependable that way.
So, what all have I missed?
Main thing, school was canceled today, and no, he added quickly, I didn't set anything on fire to cause it. It's that stupid website that we're still trying to locate. The owner has people going at each other like animals. There were 8 fights before yesterday's homeroom alone, so Head has called meetings between faculty, students, and parents in an effort to allay parental fears and to find the party responsible. Which makes me really glad I'm not goth or emo.
Weird segue that she definitely didn't take with him.
Why?
He made a sound of disgust.
Who do you think they're targeting? Head is convinced it has to be one of those weirdo depressed kids, because, you know, they're all cutters and social rejects.
Of course they were. He doesn't have a clue about his students, does he?
Nope. Even if you bought him one, I doubt he'd understand it. But given his attitude, I'd love to introduce him to Asheron and watch his head explode.
She gave a short laugh. Yeah, Ash would definitely throw his preconceived stereotype out the window.
Give me a couple minutes to get dressed, then we need to go find Nick.
Nick sighed in frustration as they sat outside the office, waiting for the secretary to make a copy of his transcript for his mother's records. He was thinking the woman must have taken the long way to the copy machine, including a scenic route through Europe. He had way too much to do to be stuck here. But at least Kirian was coming to pick him up. After he'd been attacked, neither Kirian nor his mom would let him near a door to the outside after dark. Impatient to leave, he stood up and started pacing the small walk area in the center of the waiting room. He wanted to rant over the secretary being part snail, but he knew his mom wouldn't tolerate it.
Everyone deserves your respect, Nick, especially those who are doing work for you and making your life easier. God bless them for it.
Yeah, she didn't have a sense of humor when anyone showed impatience with a worker.
Oh, hey, that's Nick. Nick!
He turned to see Jill in the hallway with her brother and 2 older people who seemed vaguely familiar to him. Since they looked too old to be Jill and Joey's parents, he assumed they must be the tuition donors. Jill came rushing over to hug him. Awkward? Why did some girls do that? He didn't like to be touched much anyway, unless it was Cody. This was intrusive.
Help me.
She squeezed his arm as she made him walk toward the door.
Nick, you have to meet our sponsors.
She smiled at them.
This is the Nick I was telling you about, who has the same last name you do.
Ah.
The man held his hand out to Nick. He seemed decent enough.
His graying hair appeared to have been brown in his youth. Dressed in a nice brown sweater and khakis, he oozed an aura of Garden District or Kenner old money, as did his accent and diction.
It's a pleasure to meet another Gaucher. I know Jill thinks the world of you. It's Nick this and Nick that all the time.
Giggling, Jill turned as red as her blouse.
Most people do think the world of my Nicky.
Dad, he's a good kid.
Honor student, here on a full scholarship. Was one of the best football players they had until he was benched with an injury. And he's already working, saving up money for college. Not to mention, he does a lot of charity work. Every morning he gets up early and goes down to Miss Liza's doll store so that he can wash off her sidewalks and balcony before she gets to work and he goes to school. He doesn't even charge her for it.
Nick wasn't sure what stunned him most. His mother's bragging on him? Or the fact that he was standing in front of his real grandparents? No wonder they'd seemed familiar. Some part of him must have remembered them from the one time he'd seen them passing by in the mall. And now that he knew, he definitely saw how much his mother favored hers. Rising to her feet, his mother moved to stand beside him.
Nick, meet your grandparents. You've always been curious about them?
Here they are. Jill's jaw dropped while Joey went bug-eyed.
I thought you said you didn't have any children, Mr. Gaucher.
His grandparents drew up like two swollen cantaloupes. It was obvious they weren't happy with Jill remembering that. Mr. Gaucher looked down his nose at Nick.
I've heard he cheated to get into school here.
His mom cast a scornful glare at her father.
That's jealousy talking. But they did make him take the test twice because they were so stunned by his superior performance. And he had the same score both times on two entirely different tests. 100%. He missed nothing and even got the bonuses. Apparently, in all the 130 years the school's been operating, my Nicky is the only one to make a perfect score. He's been courted by some of the best Ivy League schools in the country ever since.
Wow, his mom never bragged about anything. She disdained it.
Be humble in thought and humble in action. Most of all, be humble in tongue. She'd harped on that as much as she did honor thy mother and the golden rule, etc.
It was Mrs. Gaucher's turn to be snotty.
You still working in that hen house, selling yourself for money?
His mother curled her lip.
I never did that.
Not what I was told.
Then someone lied, and no, I don't work there. I'm a day manager for a restaurant, have been for over a year now.
You expect me to believe that?
Her father raked Nick with a sneer. Any more than I believe what you're saying about him? Good grief, look at him. How many fights has he been in?
His mother opened her mouth to respond, but before she could, Kirian came into the office to pick him up for work.
Dressed in a black Armani suit with a black shirt and black and white tie, he looked every bit the rich businessman and prince he'd once been. His blonde hair was perfectly styled, and if Nick didn't miss his guess, those were $2,000 repair loafers on his feet. And for once, he wasn't wearing his sunglasses inside. He stopped gallantly in front of them.
Gerice, ma petite, am I early?
She smiled up at him.
No, Kirian.
She no doubt had to force herself to say his name, since she always insisted they call him Mr. Hunter.
Perfect timing.
He returned her smile.
Nick, I had to put the Bentley and Aston Martin in the shop for oil changes. I'm afraid I was stuck with only two-seaters to drive tonight, so I'm in the Lamborghini, but I don't want you walking home after that vicious mugging, so Ash said he'd be here in a few minutes to pick you up in his Jag. Is that all right?
Nick was even more stunned. Kirian never threw his cars out like that. In that moment, he could kiss his boss for his mind-reading abilities.
Sure, Nick smiled. He's already promised me I get to drive it.
Oh, hey, Kirian, Charisse. Nick, how you feeling, son?
Maddox's father, Dr. St. James, came into the office and put a kind hand on Nick's shoulder.
Maddox told me what happened, you poor thing, and on your way to help Miss Liza close her store. She's so heartbroken.
Yes, sir, and I feel terrible about that. I keep telling her it wasn't her fault, but she won't listen.
Yeah, Liza's bad that way.
Dr. St. James jumped, then reached into his pocket.
Work, as always, and I better answer this. Y'all take care, I'll see you later.
Good night. Nick called after him. His grandfather scowled. How do you know Dr. St. James's son? Nick shrugged. We became friends while I was tutoring him. Kind of true, but if he told them that they had bonded due to a mind-control game that had turned players into zombies that Madag had unleashed on the school, it might not go over well.
Tutor? Madag?
His grandfather asked incredulously, as if he couldn't believe Nick could read, never mind help someone else.
But Madag's a genius.
In computers and science, he reeks in English and social studies. Yeah, they didn't want anything to do with him and his mom. It was obvious by the revulsion on their faces and disdain in their eyes.
Come on, Jill and Joey, we need to leave.
His mother didn't say a word until they were gone. Then she turned around and hugged Kieran.
Thank you so much for that, Mr. Hunter. You are the best.
Kieran shrugged her hold away.
No problem. I live to please.
And that you definitely did tonight. Thank you so much.
She ruffled Nick's hair.
And you be careful, and I'll see you later.
Yes, ma'am. As soon as the secretary handed her the papers, they all went outside, where Kieran had his car parked on the street in front of the school. Nick slowed down as he saw a parked police car and the officers walking around with a picture they were showing to his classmates. Police at his school was never a good thing. When they got to Stone, he pointed to Nick.
He's right there.
Nick went cold. What the heck was going on? The police made a beeline right to him. The biggest of the two narrowed his eyes.
Are you Nicholas Gaucher?
Yeah.
Then you're coming with us.
Nick laughed, nervously.
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, we do.
No, his mother said sharply. My son isn't going anywhere.
Yes, ma'am, he is. We have a warrant for his arrest.
For what?
He and his mother asked simultaneously.
Rape and theft.
Chapter 14. The look on his mother's face would haunt him forever as the cop grabbed him and shoved him against the hood of his squad car, right in front of the school for everyone to see. Nick grimaced as the cops rudely frisked him, then cuffed his hands behind his back. Once he was secured, the biggest officer grabbed him by the hair and wrenched him off the car.
Mama, I didn't do it. I didn't, I swear to God.
That's what they all say.
The cop looked over at his partner.
Wouldn't it be nice if just once they confessed and made our job easier?
Tears glistened in his mother's eyes. He could tell she wanted to believe him, but the doubt there. How could she even think he'd do something like that, even for a nanosecond? She'd been with him for 15 years. How could she not know him better?
He did his best not to look at any of his classmates or the smirking faculty members who had no doubt he was guilty. That thought sickened him. The only one who wasn't judging him guilty was Kieran.
Don't worry, Nick. I'll have you out of there as soon as you're booked.
Booked? That word slammed into him so hard that for a minute he thought he'd vomit.
Good luck with that, the smaller officer scoffed. With what we have on him, he's not going anywhere until trial.
What could they have on him? He hadn't done anything. Heck, he'd only been out of the hospital since yesterday. As they were placing him in the back seat, Caleb came running up to his mom. He frowned at her as she told him what was happening. Caleb winced and kicked the front bumper of the squad car.
Hey, the smaller cop snapped. What do you think you're doing?
What?
Caleb challenged.
I can't touch your car.
He kicked it again.
Boy, do you want to go to jail?
The taller officer asked.
For what?
Caleb braced his foot against the front fender.
It's a free country. Not when you vandalize state properties, not.
Caleb arched a defiant brow at him.
State property? My tax dollars bought this car, then. Doesn't that make it my property? Oh, that's it, you little punk.
The cop went for Caleb. Caleb scoffed.
Come on, really? What are you charging me with? Vandalism?
Caleb rolled his eyes, then shouted out to their classmates.
Come, see the violence inherent in the system. Help, I'm being repressed. Get your ass in the car,
the cop snarled, his yat accent coming out full force. They put Caleb in on the other side. Nick gaped at him. What are you doing?
Caleb glanced askance at the cops as they called in his arrest.
Where you go, I go, Gaucher. And there's no way you're going into a jail without backup. You're about to find out why a Darian lives in a prison.
Nick wasn't sure what to think of that, other than the fact his father was a mass murderer. What do you mean? The cops opened the doors and got in.
There are some things that defy explanation. Kind of like, you know, you. Not to mention your loco mindset when you did whatever it was that you did when you saved Cody, or why the color of the dryer lint always matches the color of your missing sock.
He projected his answer to Nick's mind.
A Malachian jail is definitely one of those inexplicable things.
Caleb turned his attention back to the police.
So what tort am I being held for again?
They didn't respond to Caleb. Instead, the larger cop sighed irritably.
I hate the smart mouth kids the most.
Caleb leaned forward in his seat.
So, who's the meanest person you've ever arrested?
What are you doing? Nick gasped. Caleb cracked an evil grin.
You have things you can't resist doing. This is one that is a moral imperative to me. Must rankle bullies.
You're gonna get Jack slapped. Caleb frowned at him.
Jack slapped?
Slap so hard you forget everything you know, i.e. you don't know Jack. Jack slapped?
Caleb rolled his eyes.
Nick didn't say anything else as he sat there, trying to figure out why they would think he'd raped someone when it was the most repugnant crime he could think of. Who had accused him, and why? When they got to the jail, they were gruffly hauled out of the car and into the building. As soon as they stepped through the doorway, Nick saw a familiar face, but he wasn't sure what to make of it. Virgil Ward, attorney at law. And in Virgil's case, blood-sucking attorney took on a whole new meaning, since he was also a vampire. His dark hair was short but slightly shaggy. With it brushed back from his face, he didn't appear much older than Nick or Caleb. To Nick, anyway. But Virgil managed to project a much older persona to everyone else. Those around him saw Virgil as someone in his mid-30s, dressed in a tailor-made, expensive black pinstripe suit and a pair of black Ferragamo shoes. He wore a dark purple shirt and a dark gray, purple, and black tie that had miniature skeleton bunny heads and crossed bones all over it.
Gentlemen, he said, inclining his head to the officers escorting them, these are my clients. I trust you'll take good care of them.
The larger officer growled in frustration.
I should have known. I suppose you want them put in a special holding section?
It would be prudent.
The other officer growled again.
They're not going to start eating each other or one of us, are they?
Virgil laughed. They're not zombies, men. But one of them does have special dietary concerns you might want to note.
The larger officer grumbled. Virgil winked at Nick, then projected his thoughts to him.
Don't worry, kid, I know it's your first time here, but we're set up to deal with our special needs detainees.
Special needs? Dude, I don't ride the short bus.
Good for you, 'cause some days I definitely do.
That was not comforting when coming out of the mouth of your attorney. As they walked past a group of deadly-looking gangbangers, one of the bigger members lunged at Nick with a snarl as if he was going to attack him. The moment the man did, it sent an electrical charge through Nick, one that put all of his senses on high alert and made his heart race with gleeful expectation. Suddenly, Nick saw and heard everything with a shocking clarity, and instead of cowering, he lunged at the gang member, wanting to taste his blood. The man's eyes widened before he backed down. Against his conscious will, Nick tried to break out of the policeman's hold so that he could go back to the gangbanger. Caleb cut him off.
Look at me, Nick.
For several heartbeats, he couldn't understand what Caleb had said.
Nick!
He shouted. That finally broke through the cloudy haze.
What?
Remember what I said about your father?
Yeah. Nick felt it, too. Being around this many people who were corrupted by hatred and rage and violence, it was like being a wind-up toy that someone had snapped a spring on. His powers were fully charged, and he felt more alive than he ever had. It was a heady concoction. He looked at Caleb.
Do you get the same...
He wasn't sure what to call it.
Thrill? Not to the extent you do. That fun little nugget is unique to your species alone.
And he was right. He totally got it now why his father stayed in prison. It was like breathing in fresh air and sunshine. Bad analogy, since only an idiot would breathe in the foul body odor, urine, and vomit stench that permeated the building, but that was the closest example he could think of. The cops took them to a special booking room that was reserved for Virgil's clients. They were rudely searched, fingerprinted, and then photographed. Honestly, Nick wanted to cry as it brought back his one and only other arrest when he'd been a kid. And while they'd hauled him to the station in their car, they hadn't booked him. It was so humiliating. He glanced over to Caleb as guilt stabbed him. He was the only reason Caleb was here. God love Caleb for his loyalty. Nick cringed as he looked down at the bright orange jumpsuit they'd forced him to change into. Heck, they'd even confiscated his shoelaces. I'm sorry, Cale. I didn't mean to get you into this.
He shrugged. Trust me, this is neither the worst nor the most humiliating thing I've ever gone through. And while we're here, you should pray that this is the worst thing that ever happens to you.
Point well taken. Still, it stung. While he hadn't always been the best person and had done some questionable things, he'd never really thought he'd ever be arrested for real, with real felony charges that carried a hefty prison sentence if he was found guilty. That was the kind of thing that happened to people like his father and the scum his father ran with. And now it had happened to him. They were escorted to a room that had a single holding cell. Luckily, it was empty. The cops put them inside it, then had them hold their arms through the bars so they could uncuff them. Once the cops were gone, Virgil came in to talk to them.
Rape and theft, huh? I didn't do it.
Virgil didn't respond to his statement.
They claim they have you on surveillance.
Nick shook his head.
It's a lie, I didn't do anything.
Caleb leaned against the bars.
When did the alleged crimes occur?
Virgil pulled out his PDA and opened a file.
The theft was late last night, just before midnight, at a jewelry store where you took cash and a single necklace. And the rape occurred around 3 a.m. Where were you at those times?
Home, in bed.
Virgil made a note.
You have any witnesses?
No, I was in bed alone.
Poor you, in more ways than one. Without someone to corroborate your whereabouts, and with them having photographic evidence.
Virgil grimaced.
Look me in the eyes, kid.
Nick did. After a minute, Virgil blinked, then made another note.
Okay, you're telling the truth. By the way, Nick, you have the most screwed up life. You're either boring as all get out or you're about to die. There's no middle ground with you. You might want to work on that.
No kidding. So what do you think they'll do to him?
Caleb asked.
I wish I had a better answer for you, but it all depends on who our judge is. We can have his mom say he was home. However, the prosecutor is going to say that kids slip out of their homes all the time without their parents knowing it. Nick has a bad record for violence at school.
Defending myself?
They won't bring up the why, Virgil said coldly. Only the fact that you've been in trouble many times for fighting at school, and that you were recently hospitalized for fighting.
I wasn't fighting.
Virgil arched a brow at him.
Given your record, do you think any judge or jury will buy the fact that you laid on the ground while someone hit you and you didn't fight back?
Nick winced. Another valid point, but it was the truth.
You should have filed a mugging report,
Virgil said under his breath. Nick growled at him.
I didn't want to get the kid in trouble.
No good deed goes unpunished. And for that, you might spend the rest of your life in prison. Go you.
Nick refused to believe it. It couldn't happen that way. It couldn't.
I thought the law was all about getting to the truth.
Virgil burst out laughing.
Stop watching Law and Order, kid. Courts don't care about the truth. The only thing that matters is what you can prove.
It's not innocent until proven guilty. It's, I have an open case log thicker than the New Orleans and surrounding parishes' phone books, and I need to close some of them.
So until you prove to me that I arrested the wrong person, you're going to jail, buddy. And I'm closing at least one case this week.
Nick's stomach heaved. That was not what he'd been raised believing. But if anyone knew how the legal system worked, it would be Virgil.
I just want to go home.
Virgil smiled sympathetically.
I know, Nick.
He checked his watch.
Let me go see if I can rush this along and get you a bail hearing tonight. In the event I can't, or that you need something during daylight hours, let me give you my business partner's card. His name is William Lawrence, and he's one of the best litigators there is.
Second to me, of course. After pulling out the card, he handed it to Nick. Nick frowned as he read the card.
This says Bill Lawrence, paralegal. Ah, crap, wrong card, sorry. Have no idea why that's still in my pocket. Bill's my partner's oldest son, and he interned with us as a paralegal while he was in law school. He's now one of our junior partners.
He handed Nick the correct card.
You could call Bill, but I'd rather you deal directly with either me or William. All right.
Nick tucked the card into his pocket.
By the way, who called you? Carrie and Hunter called William, and William called me. Be grateful. Without notice, you'd have been taken through general procedures, which goes a whole lot slower, and they would have put you in a holding cell with some exceptionally fun people. Believe me, I am grateful.
Even if I am in here with an undesirable. Nick glanced askance at Caleb. Caleb made a noise of pain.
Next time, Gaucher, you go alone.
Virgil checked his watch again.
All right. You two sit tight for a few, and let me go see if I can work some magic for you.
His gaze went to Caleb.
Kicking a police car? Really?
Caleb shrugged.
Car offended me. It was sitting right where I wanted to stand. What would you do?
Made sure there was no surveillance, then sucked the cop's blood dry and blown the car up.
Caleb laughed.
Hostile, I love it. You and me could be friends.
He glanced over to Nick.
As for why, I had to do something for them to lock me up with Snotnose, and I didn't want it to be anything too serious, since I would like to leave sooner rather than later. I've got enough things hunting me. I really don't need anything else.
I feel that pain myself, brother.
Virgil slid his PDA into his pocket.
I'll see you two in a bit.
He started to leave, then stopped.
I know you, don't I?
He asked Nick.
About a year ago, you helped us out. We were with Bubba and Mark at the time.
His eyes brightened with recall, then they widened with substantial interest. He pointed at Nick, but looked at Caleb.
He's your Nick.
Caleb saluted him.
You're a little slow in the uptake tonight, Virg. You down a few pints?
Freshly fed, and we really need to get him out of here.
He practically ran out of the room. Nick turned a probing stare to Caleb. What aren't you telling me?
The longer you stay in a place with concentrated malice, and let's face it, this is a cesspit of malice, the more it'll seep into you. Think of it like a tributary feeding a stream that turns into a river. The more you're around it, the more it feeds the demon side of you. The more you're likely to convert into the true Malachi.
He would be like the monster who'd almost assaulted Cody. Is that why my father attacked my mother?
What do you mean?
Nick didn't answer. Instead, he fell silent as memories went through him and he tried to make sense of it all.
I think my father loves my mother.
Caleb scoffed.
That's a delusion. Malachi's are incapable of love.
Nick scowled.
I'm not.
You haven't been fully converted yet. You're still an embryo.
Not as much of an embryo as Caleb thought, but Nick wasn't going to argue that right now, or let anyone know about the bargain he'd made.
I disagree. You didn't see his face when she was yelling at him. He was hurt by it, and he couldn't have been that hurt if he didn't care about her.
That was the first thing he'd learned in grade school. When someone insulted and yelled at you and you didn't have feelings for them, it angered you, made you want to hurt them. But when you loved someone and they attacked, it raised your level of hurt more than it raised your temper. Caleb fell silent as he considered that.
You know, that actually explains a lot about you. And a lot about Adarian.
What do you mean?
Caleb moved to sit on the cot underneath the bar-covered window.
Normally, a Malachi is born to parents who hate it, both mother and father. The father, because he knows if the child lives, he will die. Most Malachi, including Adarian, murder their children as soon as they find out about them.
You mean I had siblings?
Yeah, and he killed every one of them, except you, which never made sense to me. You, he wanted protected. And the mothers hate because of the way their children were conceived, the babies. Again, your mother is different in that she embraced you. So if what you're saying is true, you are a Malachi conceived in love and nurtured. That, my friend, has never happened.
Which means I can love, right? Caleb's gaze lost focus as he thought it over.
It means something. Not sure what, but...
It gave Nick hope. Maybe he could avert his future and find a way to save them all.
Wishing he had an answer, Nick moved to the other cot, closer to the door.
So, how did you save Cody, by the way?
Nick cringed at the question, then hedged at the answer.
I took her to help.
And that would be...
Someone who helped her.
Caleb growled low in his throat.
I don't want to play this game with you.
But it wasn't a game. It was serious business.
Nick had made a pact that he knew he shouldn't have. One Ambrose had thrown down a tantrum over when he learned about it.
What have you done?
Ambrose had snarled in his face.
What I had to.
Ambrose had held his hands out like he was choking Nick.
A dog can't serve two masters.
I'm not a dog.
Ambrose curled his lip.
You're so stupid, I knew I should have killed you.
Nick had snorted.
Wow, that hurts me in my tender place. Nice to hear me say I wished myself dead. Love you too.
Ambrose shook his head.
You don't understand. I made your mistake later in life, but I did the same exact thing. I bound myself to my enemy, and it did not work out well.
But we're changing the future, right? For all you know, I might have already fixed things.
Ambrose had paused in the circle he was pacing around Nick's room.
That's where it gets tricky. There are things that will happen regardless of the actions we take.
Such as?
You meeting Kyrian and working for him? No matter what I've tried, that always happens. I can't stop it. I can only change the events that lead up to it and the time in our life when it happens. That one moment of meeting him, however, is written in stone. But...
Ambrose squinted as he ruminated. When he spoke again, his voice was a full octave lower.
You might have found the answer for us.
What do you mean?
Why did you save Cody?
Nick pressed his lips together as he debated telling him. But in the end, it wouldn't matter. One way or another, Ambrose would learn the truth.
I love her.
Ambrose sneered.
Love? You don't even know the meaning of that word.
Oh, yes, I do. Don't you dare tell me I don't.
Ambrose shook his head.
You're too young to understand it.
No, I'm not. I know what I feel, and I know it's real. I would die for her.
Then you're even dumber than...
Ambrose paused as his eyes danced around. He closed the distance between them and smiled a smile that made Nick's blood run cold.
We are destined to become a Dark Hunter. That, too, I haven't been able to avert. Until now, the catalyst has always been the death of our mother, but...
Nick wasn't sure he liked the sound of that word.
But what?
If you love another woman, a woman I've never known existed before, then maybe she's the one who dies instead.
Agony exploded inside him.
No, you're wrong!
Think about it.
Ambrose jerked him into a tight hug.
You're right, kid. You may have found the answer I've sought all these years. That has to be it. You love Cody enough to die for her. It only stands to reason that she'd be the one you lose to launch you into a DH.
That was not what he wanted to hear.
While Ambrose might enjoy the thought, it made Nick ill.
I won't let her die, I won't!
Anger turned Ambrose's eyes a deep shade of red.
Listen to me, moron. Who would you rather bury? Your mother or your girlfriend? Because I'm telling you right now, one of them is going to die horribly.
I won't allow it.
You have no choice.
Ambrose had spat those words out coldly. Now Nick was feeling the truth of Ambrose's prediction. By trying to keep Cody alive, he'd already screwed up, badly. And as he stared at the glass over the window, he saw images appear. In one, he saw his mother in a chair inside a house he'd never been in before. Her lifeless eyes were wide open as he called out for her to wake up. In the other, he saw an older version of Cody, dressed in a white wedding gown. She lay in his arms, covered in blood. Her blood.
It's your imagination.
It had to be.
Yet inside, he knew the truth.
Those were the two possible futures for him. Just like Ambrose had said, one of them would have to die. He might not have saved Cody at all, only delayed her death.
Ambrose had talked about rearranging time frames. He could change when things happened, but not the things that were destined to happen.
Instead of saving Cody, he might only have bought her a little more time.
That's better than nothing.
Or was it? Had he let her die, his life wouldn't be so complicated. He'd have never made a bargain that might very well be the death of him. The more he thought about it, the more he hated the Fates, or Ambrose, or whoever was causing this to be his future. It wasn't fair to see what was coming and to have no way to avert it. That was the cruelest blow of all. And the more his anger built, the more his body temperature elevated.
Nick?
There was a note of panic in Caleb's voice.
What's going on in your head?
Sitting on his cot in their cell, Nick had lost his ability to understand Caleb. Instead, all he could see, hear, or feel was his own anguish. It wrapped around him until it suffocated him. No matter what he did, it only made things worse. It killed people he loved. The darkness swallowed him again. But this time, it was inside and not outside his body. And it hurt so deep in his essence that he felt like his very soul was being flogged and flayed. He was standing out on a ledge, looking down at a landscape that terrified him. This was his life, and he'd already ruined it. 15, and it was over. The damage done, and so deep that it couldn't be unraveled.
Nick!
He ignored Caleb as his pain tripled. And in that one moment when it hurt the most, he had total clarity. There was only one way to stop the pain. It was extreme, but if it worked, it would stop everything. Don't do this. It would destroy his mother. She dies anyway. Or Cody would. And he heard Cody's precious voice in his head. We all make our own decisions.
It was time he made his. If the darkness wanted him, it could take him. With one condition.
The answer had been here the whole time. This
crap would end tonight. He would make sure of it. Nick!
Caleb shook him, trying to make him understand his voice, but he wasn't getting through whatever had sunk its fangs into him. Worse, Caleb saw the physical manifestation of the Malachi powers. Nick's skin flashed from its human tawny shade to the swirling demon skin, his eyes from blue to orange to red. If Caleb didn't stop this, if he didn't find a way to reach Nick before the demon swallowed him, all of them would die.
Chapter 15. Do you really want to die?
That question hung in Nick's mind, taunting him. In his dream, he looked out into a field, and there he saw his future. For the next 2 years, he'd be a laughingstock in school. Everyone had seen him arrested, everyone, even his grandparents. The horror of his mother's expression, the doubt in her eyes. And what waited for him? More loss. Either his mother or Cody. And others Ambrose refused to name. Why should he continue living when the cost of it
would be their lives.
If he were dead, there would be no reason for any of them to die. That would stop it completely. It would. They would be free. His father would no longer be after him to kill him.
The pain that had lived inside him since the hour of his birth would end.
I'm so sick of it all.
And he was. At 15, he felt like a battered old man. Life was so hard. Some days it seemed like the only purpose of it was to see just how hard it could kick him, how low it could make him sink. It had needlessly slapped him senseless most days, and for what? Why did it have to be like this? Why did people have to be so mean for no reason whatsoever? Why did they have to attack, bring someone down? End it. You can control that much of your life. Suddenly, Grimm was beside him. He was dressed in a flowing black robe, his face barely visible from inside his cowl. In his hand, he held a black knife that looked like a military K-bar. Silently, he held it out to Nick.
One cut. One moment of one last pain.
Everything would be over. He would hurt no more. As Nick reached for the knife, he felt another presence beside him.
Don't do it, Nick. This isn't you.
Cody. The sound of that sweet, soft voice reached out and touched him in places he didn't fully understand. She covered his hand with hers, and then laced her fingers with his. They were so soft as they slid against his skin.
Close your eyes.
She breathed in his ear. Without question, he obeyed. His head swam as images blurred through his mind in rapid succession. He didn't know what he was looking at, not until Cody kissed him. She pulled back and laid her hand to his hot cheek. Then she spoke to him in a language he'd never heard before, yet he understood her words perfectly.
There's an enemy inside all of us, Nick, that wants to do us harm. It hates us passionately, and it wears us down with echoing insults we can't escape. No matter what we try or what we do, it's a never-ending playback that torments us when we're alone, and especially at night when we're trying to sleep and there's no one else beside us.
The love in her eyes scorched him as she stroked his cheek with her thumb.
But somehow, our sanity returns and drives that madness away. And we are not what that voice says we are. We're stronger than that, and our dark, ugly interloper knows it. I think that's why it hates us so much, because it knows that we alone can defeat it. We can send it back to the darkest part of our nature where it belongs, bury it so deep that we drown out those voices that hurt and torture us. It does not have to control us, and we don't have to listen.
She smiled up at him.
No one is immune to the dark interloper. We all feel that those wounds won't heal, that they go too deep and let so much blood that it floods our souls with utter agony. That we have screwed up beyond repair, but it's not true. What we have, Nick, is one life, and every day of it is the richest blessing. The bad times teach us lessons about ourselves and others, but most of all, they show us just how strong we are. For we survive what destroys a lesser being. And every day that we live is victory over that interloper. You and I are like creatures. We are not sheep to be slaughtered. We are fighters. And in the midst of our darkest battles, we don't lie down and get stepped on. We shake our fists at the sky and shout, "Bring me your worst, because I intend to give you my best, and I will win no matter what it takes. You may knock me down, I can't stop that, but I will get back up, and when I do, your blood will be the blood spilled."
He wanted to believe that. He did.
"I'm so tired, Cody," he breathed. "It just keeps coming, with no let up. Everything I do is wrong. Everything I touch turns to crap, and I'm sick to death of being blamed for things I haven't done." "That's the interloper talking, not you. I know my Nick. My Nick is strong.
He licked his lips as his pain intensified.
If I live, you or my mother will die. What's the point?
What's the point? She asked incredulously.
The point is to savor and treasure every moment, every breath. They are precious because they are limited. Nothing in abundance is ever held dear. It's cast off without any thought whatsoever. But happiness, victory, and life are sacred because they are fleeting and stingily measured.
And the pain is never ending. Talk about abundance. It was shoveled at him so fast he was buried in it.
Not true. And you know it. Pain is even more fleeting than the other emotions. Yes, it stays for a while sometimes, but it always goes eventually. Always. Do you remember what you told Brynna when you stopped her from killing herself?
That I wore tacky shirts? Smiling, she shook her head at him.
The rest of it?
Vaguely.
You said, I know you're hurting. Believe me, I know how it feels to get your emotional teeth kicked down your throat so far that it makes you choke on the last shred of your dignity. That sick feeling in your gut that tells you you can't take it anymore. That life sucks hard, and it won't ever get better. That you're walking on the tightrope, trying to hang on with your toes because you ain't got no safety net, and you're barely one sneeze away from being a stain on the floor. But you're not alone. You're not. You've got a lot of people who care about you. People who love you, and who would be devastated if something ever happened to you.
People who will die if I live, Nick reminded her.
And do you really think we wouldn't be every bit as devastated if we lost you?
No. He hadn't thought about that at all.
There's always another side to everything, Nick. Two perspectives on all things. No two memories of any event are ever the same. They're all sifted through our emotional channels, which run deep, and they color every input into our brain. How many times have you argued with someone over a past event where they claim one thing happened, but you don't remember it that way?
All the time. But, she placed her hand over his lips to keep him from speaking.
Do you know what suicide is?
Yeah, death.
She shook her head. It's the ultimate act of selfishness. Yes, death is painful for those who live on. Losing someone burns so deep that it never stops. Time doesn't heal it. It just dulls it for a little while. Believe me, I know. Unlike you, I have lost those I love. And I grieve every day of my life that I can't get a hold of them, that I can't hear their voices or see their faces. I would give anything I have, my soul, my life, if I could just hug them one more time and tell them that I love them and how much I miss them. But again, it's because our time together is so fleeting and limited that it teaches us to savor every smile they give us. And having lived through their deaths, I can tell you this, I love them too much to make them suffer the way I have over their loss. I would rather say goodbye to them first than have them alive for years, aching for me the way I grieve for them. What do you think your mother would do if something happened to you?
She'd follow me to the grave.
How many times had she told him that? If anything ever happened to you, they'd have to dig two graves. I couldn't live if I lost you. I have buried everyone I love, Nick. Please, don't be so cruel as to make me bury you, too.
Tears glistened in her eyes.
I can't do it again, Nick. I can't. And I would rather give my life for you than have you give yours for me.
He covered her hand with his and savored the warmth of her touch and the words that branded themselves in his heart. Nakota tightened her grip on him.
If you doubt anything I say, ask Dr. Burdett why she's in New Orleans, why she comes here every year at this time.
He frowned at her words.
Why?
Day after tomorrow is the anniversary of the death of Bubba's wife and son. And yesterday was the anniversary of the death of his best friend. Dr. Burdett's here because she's terrified that even all these years later, Bubba will kill himself to get away from the pain of losing the three of them.
When did they die?
His wife and son 12 years ago, when his son was only 2.
Nick's heart ached as he realized that Bubba's son would have gone to school with him. They were almost the same age. Cody nodded as she read his thoughts.
It's why Bubba all but adopted you when you met. His son had dark hair and blue eyes.
Just like him.
And it's why he and Mark are such good friends.
Nick scowled at that.
I don't understand.
Mark's older brother was Bubba's best friend. In college, they went out like millions of others their age. They'd won a championship bowl game and had wanted to celebrate. Bubba had too much to drink, so Mark's brother drove Bubba's truck that night. On their way back to the dorm, for reasons no one knows, their pickup left the road and overturned. Bubba was thrown from the passenger side, but Mark's brother was pinned underneath the truck. Had Bubba not been drunk and passed out, he could have gotten help before his friend died. Instead, Mark's brother bled to death before another car spotted them and notified the authorities. Bubba has never forgiven himself.
That one bit explained so much about Bubba's idiosyncrasies. The poor man. And yet Nick had known Bubba all this time, and he'd never had a clue about any of that.
Is that why he didn't go pro?
In part. He also didn't want to raise his son in that kind of lifestyle. Because he'd already lost his best friend, he didn't want to waste even a second of his time with his wife and child. He wanted a job that would have him home with them every night.
And still he'd lost them. It was so not right.
But you see how our tragedies interconnect and shape us? Bubba wouldn't have had all the time he did have with his wife and son had he not lost his best friend.
Nick saw it, even though he didn't like it. And he wouldn't teach self-defense courses if his wife hadn't died. Cody nodded.
People aren't just ants rushing around over a crust of bread. Every life, no matter how isolated, touches hundreds of others. It's up to us to decide if those micro-connections are positive or negative. But whichever we decide, it does impact the ones we deal with. One word can give someone the strength they needed at that moment, or it can shred them down to nothing. A single smile can turn a bad moment good, and one wrong outburst or word could be the tiny push that causes someone to slip over the edge into destruction.
She was definitely right about that. One touch of her hand could soothe him in a way nothing else did. Still, the voices were in his head, and they were loud and clear, telling him how worthless he was, how ugly, how everyone would be better off without him.
Do you really hear the self-loathing soundtrack in your head, too? He asked her.
Nick, I promise you, we all do. You know your friend Asheron?
Yeah?
Have you ever seen him without dark sunglasses on?
Now that she mentioned it, no, I haven't.
Ash is so embarrassed by his own eyes that he won't show them. At all. Not even to those he's closest to. If they ever do see them, he keeps his gaze on the floor. And have you seen the size of my butt? If it gets any bigger, it's going to be assigned its own zip code. And don't get me started on how thin and flat my hair is, or the fact that I can't spell anything. I feel so stupid sometimes, and yet here I am, able to summon powers from most dimensions. None of that matters to my inner beast that insults me every day of my life.
He narrowed his gaze, suspiciously.
I think you're making all of that up, 'cause, girl, I don't see a flaw anywhere on your body.
Of course, I haven't seen your butt, except when it's been covered with clothing.
Maybe if you show me some of what you're talking about in the flesh.
She wrinkled her nose at him.
You're awful.
He was.
but in the worst moment of his life, she'd made him smile. At least until his thoughts left her and returned to what had them here in this fringe area. What had possessed him in his cell? How do you learn to function past the voices? They're always in my head on a continuous loop. Drown them out with music or logic? Yeah, I might not be that smart or beautiful, but that's not all there is to me. I matter to people. Not all people, but to the ones who matter to me. And they're the only ones in this world who count. To the darkest pit with the rest of them. He leaned down and pressed his forehead against hers so that he could stare into her eyes. I love you, Cody. And I hear everything you've said. But I don't think I'm strong enough to live without you. How do you think I feel about you? If that was true, she was right. How could he leave her to the agony of grief if he killed himself? She tilted her head until she captured his lips and kissed him until his senses reeled. Her touch calmed and soothed him until he felt like himself again. But with that sensation, he felt her leaving. Cody, he called, reaching out for her. But she was already gone. Suddenly, he slammed back into his body. Opening his eyes, he found himself in the holding cell with Caleb next to him. Caleb let out a relieved sigh. Thank the universe she got through to you. Nick frowned. What are you talking about? Caleb laughed bitterly. You just experienced what I told you I couldn't explain. Whenever a Malachi gets into environments like this one, its base urge is to become violent. In the past, when that happened, it caused a Malachi to attack others. But you, my friend, turn it inward instead of outward.
Meaning what?
You become self-destructive. Nick didn't understand the fearful concern in Caleb's eyes.
Is that not better?
Depends.
Nick was getting frustrated with Caleb's vague answers.
On?
If you want mankind enslaved by you or your father.
Great. Just what he wanted to hear. You know, I'm beginning to think the only choice anyone has in life is between either a bad outcome or a worse one.
You're right. It does seem to be the case most times.
Nick grew quiet as three policemen came in.
We're taking both of you to your bail hearing.
Caleb actually looked pleased.
Go Virgil.
Nick was feeling pretty good about it, until he noticed something about the policeman. It was only a flash, but he recognized it as his powers warning him. Caleb, get back!
Why?
Using the trick Thorne had shown him, Nick summoned a firebolt. His hand glowed as a tennis ball-sized stone manifested in his palm. They're Lawlers! As Caleb moved back, one of them tossed out a blood-red chain that wrapped around Caleb's throat and held him in place. Nick let fly his bolt into that demon's chest. He exploded into fire as the other two rushed Nick. Caleb caught one before he could reach Nick and broke his neck. The one attacking Nick threw a wide, telegraphed punch. Nick ducked and came up with a fist into the demon's jaw. The blow shattered his shell, causing him to disintegrate. Something that showered them with an odor so foul, Nick gagged on it.
What kind are they? Nick asked.
The kind that shouldn't be here.
How so?
Caleb gave him a hard stare.
They're blood demons.
He said that like Nick ought to know what that was. Yeah, clueless as normal.
Isn't that what Virgil is?
Damn, Nick, quit being bibliophobic.
Nick grimaced.
When did we quit speaking the same language?
Means you're afraid of books. I've never seen anyone stand toe-to-toe with a Dave and not have a shred of fear in him, yet if I hand you a book, unless it's manga, you act like it's gonna bite you.
It's not the biting that scares me, it's the boring. Besides, I like books with pictures. Manga can get pretty racy in shonen, and my mother doesn't confiscate it and ground me for reading it. Unlike other male materials that launch her into a 3-week rant about how women don't look like that and how it's disrespectful to her to have it in her house.
Caleb growled at him.
You are so mature at times that you lure me into forgetting the fact that you're an embryo